Hello, my special radio listeners, and welcome to yet another episode of Sex Talk, previously known as Loveline. I am DJ Fresh Traveler 5000, and tonight we have a very unusual guest. We're not going to talk about sex at all, or maybe we'll talk about sex a little bit later. But with us in the studio tonight, we've got Charlotte, and Charlotte is a world traveler and ambassador for peace with the Justice League. Is that right?
With the what?
Justice League. You know,
I've belonged to a lot of organizations, but not a Justice League.
I'm aware that you're not supposed to talk about that publicly. We'll just say that's confidential. And so with me in the studio tonight is also Charlotte's...
Board protector.
Board protector. And, of course, as always, DJ Juan Pablo. Producer Kate is on vacation, and she'll be back with us next week. So, Charlotte, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
And... Charlotte, earlier you and I were in a cafe and we were talking about your many varied experiences, and you told me that one of your most interesting travels, you visited the birthplace of Jesus.
No, where he supposedly died.
Oh, the
his burial place.
The burial place of Jesus, and this of course is in Israel somewhere.
No, in Kashmir.
Kashmir.
Which is a part of India, the northern part of India, which is India and Pakistan have been fighting over it for years, because when India and Pakistan split up, Kashmir elected to stay with India, that part of Kashmir. And the other part is a place called Murray, that part is in Pakistan. They normally are just a few miles apart, but in order to get from one to the other, you've got to go all the way down to Lahore Amritsar border crossing, which is the only place you can go from Pakistan to India. Unless you're flying in.
I mean, is this a physical barrier or a political barrier?
Well, it's a political barrier because the roads are still there. I remember the
first
time I went over there, there were lots of troops. That was back in 1956, on both sides of the border,
and
in Pakistan and India and Kashmir.
And so how is it that Jesus got all the way over to Kashmir? I mean,
well, they think that there's a book called The Missing Years of Jesus, which is rather fascinating. And I had heard about it when this Australian that I met that was writing an article about the Jews having gone from Israel all the way up to Kashmir. And the thing is that the idea is that Christ... Those missing years from when he was 12 and turned out the temple, the money changers in the temple, and the time that he met St. John the Baptist and was baptized, there are missing years of 17 years, I think, from when he was 12 to 29. And they think that he traveled on the Silk Road with the merchants and ended up in a place called Ladakh, because Ladakh has a record of him having been there. And I can't remember now who it was, but there was a Russian, and then there was also a woman from England who had traveled to this place in Hemis, where they actually saw this book, which mentioned that Christ had been there. But when other people went and asked to be shown the book, they said they didn't know what they were talking about. The idea, I think, was that they didn't want people to know that the book was there, because all of a sudden it disappeared.
So this is some kind of ancient scroll that tells a story of Jesus' arrival?
Well, I'm not quite sure. It's one of the books, and the books there are not typical books like we have where you turn the pages from right to left. They have sort of, they're sort of rectangular in shape, and there's sort of parchment on these things, and you turn it overlap sort of from top to bottom, so to speak, instead of right to left. And that's what they are. I saw some, when I was there, I visited some of the monasteries later, and that's the kind of a book I saw. In fact, I spent the night in one of the monks' cells in a place called Tok Tok in Ladakh one time when I went there. And that was rather interesting.
Did you just say Tok Tok in Ladakh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Every summer they have these festivals. But anyway, I got off the track about Jesus. But the idea is I've saw his burial place up there, and they have actually footprints. And they say that those are Jesus' footprints. And there's a place in Kashmir called Sonamarg, which is where the buses leave to go to Ladakh, and Sonamarg means Jesus's meadow. Now, it's very strange they have these names if there's not some connection with Jesus. And there's also a Mount Solomon there, and there are other towns in Ladakh, in India, in Kashmir, that this friend of mine was investigating. He was going to write this book, and this man from Australia, and I was going to help him write the book. But I don't think he's ever finished it. I went back the next year, and he was not given a visa to go to India. I've seen him since in Australia, but that was very interesting, that aspect of things.
So this was your friend, the movie star?
He was in the movies, yeah. He was in the Fire Pavilions. It was written, it came out about 1984, 85. Amy Irving was in it, and I forget who the other people were in it.
Right, she was wearing a black wig in that.
Yeah, she was wearing a black wig, right. And I can't think of the name of the book. The author of it was a woman that had lived in India many years. In fact, she knew the woman that I visited over there. I stayed on a friend's houseboat for two different occasions in 1984 and 1985. And it was 1984 that I met this Australian that was writing this book on the Jews.
So I'm a little confused. I mean, I have to admit that I cut catechism when I was younger, but Jesus is Jesus died on the cross, was dragged to some kind of tomb, you know.
Well, that's another thing that's contested. Supposedly, there's some question about whether or not he actually did die on the cross. This is going to sound strange to people, but I've been reading a lot. I've been reading several books. In fact, I heard a man speak on the radio, National Public Radio, the other day, and he was saying more or less the same sort of thing. How do we know that he really died? And I was surprised to hear him say this. I've forgotten whether he's written a book or had read a book somebody else had written, but he was mentioning this. Because Joseph of Arimathea supposedly went to Pilate to claim Jesus' body, and they said he was surprised that he was already dead. And he'd only been up there 4 hours, and they said, is he dead? The idea was that during the time that he was carrying the cross up to where he was going to be crucified, that they had given him some kind of drugs along the way, opium or something like that, to deaden the pain. And then when he was put up on the cross, and after 4 hours or so, when Joseph of Arimathea wanted to take him down, one of the soldiers who was supposedly in on the conspiracy, perhaps, put a spear in his side. Now, if he would really wanted to kill him to make sure he was dead, he would have put it in the stomach, which they did to some of the other people that were nailed to the cross to kill them off right away. But he didn't do this. In fact, I think he was also the soldier that, when Christ was on the cross, put a sponge on a spear and put it up to him. And they think at that time he might have even given him opium at that time. But anyway, when Joseph of Arimathea went to claim the body and they took the body down from the cross, he had conveniently rented a tomb close by. And they said, why would Joseph of Arimathea rent a tomb in that part of the world when he was from Bethlehem and not Jerusalem?
And also to rent it.
And what?
To rent it.
I'm sorry, I meant... Yeah. Anyway, he purchased
a
tomb, I guess.
Three-day rate.
And they were treating him with healing herbs. And then there's, of course, a Shroud of Turin, which a lot of people claim was the outline of Jesus.
Right.
And, of course, the people in Italy, I was just read another book about it by a man by the name of Ian Wilson. I'd read a previous book about it, too. And he thinks that actually... that there was some hanky-panky when they got at the samples this last time, which was several years ago, that the man that disappeared from the scene, the Italian at the Vatican, wherever it was that they were doing this, disappeared for half an hour. So he had plenty of time to do something not particularly kosher. In other words, instead of cutting the samples in front of everybody, he disappeared. And
so he might have photocopied the Shroud of Turin and let them test that.
No, right? Because of this book. According to this book, there was talk of a picture of Christ. And I can't remember exactly, but it showed up like 100 or 200 years after Christ's death, supposedly. And it was mentioned in quite a few books. And then it disappeared for a while, and then it reappeared later. But supposedly it was only folded in such a way that you actually only saw the facial imprint and not the whole body. And the thing is, you know, what would it do to prove that if Christ didn't die on the cross, that that was his shroud? Because it showed that the person was alive at this time, I believe. And they duplicated it. This Ian Wilson duplicated it. And I forget exactly how he did it. But with the herbs and things, evidently the heat given off from the herbs causes an imprint.
Mm-hmm.
And he got samples of some of this... the material that was tested, and it didn't agree with some of the other samples. So that's why they think that they found, there's plenty of 12th century cloths around, evidently in museums and different places, and they think that maybe what happened, they substituted 12th century pieces of cloth so that when they examined it, it would come up that it was 12th century cloth, and not really pieces of the actual shroud. So I don't know, it's speculation, you know, it's just like anything else, but it's fascinating.
But when he was taken down from the cross, then
they took him to this tomb. Joseph of Arimathea took him to this tomb, and they treated him with healing herbs. Now, why? If somebody's dead, you wouldn't treat him with healing herbs. supposedly 100 pounds of myrrh and 100 pounds of something else. And the reason when they went to get him and he wasn't there was because he had left the tomb, not necessarily that he had risen.
So, what a great con, if that turns out to be the case.
Well, of course, the church wouldn't like that too much if he didn't really. I mean, that's all the speculations based on that, you know.
So this place in Kashmir is the final resting place of Jesus.
Well, supposedly, and the German man wrote a book several years ago, and he said that that was what he thought happened, too. Supposedly, he had several children. He had married and had several children and died in Kashmir. And it's possible because a lot of his thinking is Hindu, Buddhist, and that kind of thing.
Right.
A lot
right.
of different religions, some that of the true. Aspects of. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that he traveled on the Silk Road. Where else would he have been for 17 years? I mean, there's no mention of him.
So he'd gone there before, and then he was crucified, and then he went back.
Yeah, supposedly.
Well, there's no mention of a lot of people at that age for 17 years, and in fact, for their whole lives.
Well, we're not even sure who killed Kennedy, really. You know, a lot of people are still speculating about that, and that's recent.
Right.
So how the heck are we going to know about 2,000 years ago?
Now, is there a place in India where Kennedy's...
No. No, I'm just kidding. There's a lot of people still don't believe the story on Kennedy. That's all. JF Kennedy.
Yeah, there's the Mount O'Driscoll in the middle of Kashmir. In fact, that is in Pakistan today, I think.
The what is?
Mount O'Driscoll.
Oh, I haven't never heard of that. Mount O'Driscoll. And actually, supposedly his mother is buried in Murray, Pakistan, and not in Ephesus. I've been to Ephesus and
who's
seen
whose mother?
Jesus' mother.
Uh-huh.
Supposedly is buried in Ephesus, and St. John the Baptist took her there after Christ was died.
Speaking of St. John, today is St. John the Baptist.
Hmm?
After midnight today will be the festivity of St. John the Baptist.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't realize
how proper,
that. Isn't that
how
pretty apropos then, huh?
Apropos, totally.
So what this festivity takes, what do you do during this festivity?
I don't know. What do you do?
Well, they made it coincide with the solstice now? So, you know, you basically make big bonfires and you chant.
Oh, the solstice?
Give somebody a non-fatal wound and apply myrrh to it?
Well, another thing, too, supposedly Mary Magdalene is buried in Kashgar, according to this Australian friend of mine. And I was in Kashgar later on, and I said to somebody, is there any kind of a tomb here? Supposedly Mary Magdalene was buried here, but nobody seemed to know about it. A couple of people said, yeah, that sounds vaguely familiar, but nobody, maybe they just said that, I don't know.
So Jesus' whole... posse just got out of there after he was crucified and made their move.
I have no idea.
Yeah, makes sense.
Well, so what? I mean, since I missed catechism, what does the Bible say happened to Jesus after the resurrection, after the first death? Where do they think he finally?
He raised to heaven.
Oh, so
on Easter Sunday, you see.
And so he just vanished. Well, I mean, there you go.
Well, supposedly
and the Himalayas are pretty close to heaven, I suppose.
Supposedly, the disciples saw him walking along the road. And they didn't believe it was he, and he said, because he had said something about seeing them in another place. And he didn't necessarily mean up in heaven. He meant someplace else on earth. I don't know. This is another book I read a while back.
Well, you know, fundamentalist interpretations of the Bible abound on all sides, so this is another one, I suppose. You know, looking at the details and trying to derive some truth from them.
So if you're a fundamentalist or a biblical revisionist, I encourage you to call into the studio with your comments and concerns. 268-WRCT and 621-WRCT, those are the phone numbers, and those stand for 621-9728 and 268-9728, respectively. So now, Charlotte, you're also telling me that in Kashmir there was some special stone that defies the laws of physics.
Yeah, I was saying this, that it was new to me. It's called the Kakapol stone, and it's supposedly Moses' stone. And if you get 11 people, Kakapol means 11
Kakapol.
In Kashmiri.
Okay.
Or maybe it's Hindi.
Means something different in my culture.
If you get 11 people, and you put each of you puts a finger under this rock, it weighs 140 pounds, you can lift it up. And we tried it. We got 11 people, including some children.
So, but that really bothers me. Also, so I'm bothered from both a mathematical and a historical perspective. I mean, so this is some ancient stone that they just let anybody lift up?
Anybody can lift it up. It's in a little courtyard there.
And I don't know. So, and the other thing, I mean, 140 pounds divided by 11 people is only...
Actually, it was more. It was 70 kilos. So a kilo is, what, 2.2 pounds?
Right. So 154 pounds. But still, I mean, you know, 11 people can easily lift 154 pounds.
Well, I don't understand that.
I can lift with one finger.
With one finger?
But I can lift 10 pounds with a finger. I mean, 10 pounds is not very much.
Well, I don't know. They say you can do the same trick with a person in a chair, and each of you puts a finger under each leg. Four people put a finger
under each leg. An ordinary person or some kind of Moses chair? Wow, well, so I have to, the rest of your story is very fascinating, but I have to sort of, I'm not sure, I have to remain skeptical about the Moses. Why is it Moses stone, anyway?
I have no idea. There's also a Mount Solomon, too, in Kashmir, in Srinagar. This is in Srinagar. S-R-I-N-A-G-A-R.
And, I'm a little, the significance of Mount Solomon is what?
I don't know, but Mount of Solomon, of course, Solomon is a famous name and doesn't appear up in Kashmir ever before, you know?
Oh, I see. So you're saying that there's all these kind of famous biblical figures that are ending up in India for no other reason?
Well, not that the figures ended up there, but there are a lot of place names that have biblical ideas. In fact, there are a lot of other little villages with the same names as villages in Israel. The spelling is slightly different, but they're the same name as those in Israel, so people might have gone there and called the places the same names as places they came from in Israel.
That's true of Ohio, too, in fact.
Ohio? Same names as Israel?
Yeah, sure. There's all sorts of biblical names there. But but she was saying something that made sense to me, that the parts of Jesus' doctrine that were not Jewish were really from Hinduism and
right.
So it kind of makes a little sense that there would be some.
They called him Saint Isa, or Isa. I don't know how you pronounce it. Saint Isa or Saint Isa, up in that part of the world, in India and in Ladakh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's take this moment and pause and share with our listeners a public service announcement, a very germane one. Help protect the environment and conserve resources by recycling your old white pages. For a phone book collection site near you, call the Allegheny County Health Department at 412-687-ACHD. ACHD stands for Allegheny County Health Department. Thank you.
That's a good idea, because I think we take down too many forests with all the paper we use, and it's a good idea to recycle. Well, a lot of these fast food places use a lot of paper, too.
What happens to this recycled paper? That's what I want to know. I mean, you can't... What is...
I don't know. Sometimes you get cards and things that said made out of recycled paper.
I don't buy it. I think the Lord put the forests on this earth for us to use and destroy.
Oh God!
World.
Oh no! There are too many of them being destroyed now. Not to mention Brazil's. A lot of them are being. Mm-hmm. A lot of the forests are being destroyed. And of course, the less forests, the less air we can breathe properly. You know.
Well, actually, most of our oxygen comes from the sea.
Most of our oxygen comes from where?
The oceans. Plankton in the oceans.
Wow.
So, wrong again, Charlotte.
Well, I'm wrong lots of times.
I'm just toying with your emotions, of course. I try not to let any of our guests leave before crying at least once due to my cruelty.
Oh, I don't usually cry.
Today you will.
So now how does India connect to the lost continent of Atlantis? We were talking about that before, too.
No, I didn't say India.
Oh,
I said,
I'm sorry, I misunderstood you.
Well, no. Supposedly Santorini, they've contemplated, might be Atlantis. But then I just read a book recently by Colin Wilson called From Atlantis to the Sphinx, which is very fascinating. I was just in England and I got it at the airport. And he says that the Sphinx, he said that part of Antarctica, the ice covered Antarctica more recently than they thought. It was not such a long time ago. He said that he wonders if Atlantis was originally Antarctica, or Antarctica had been Atlantis.
But that's so far from all the classic literature.
Well, no, they said that they traveled. There were canals there and all sorts of things, and they traveled far and wide. Now, Stonehenge, which has the equinox, you know, they have a certain time of the year when they can look through the stones and see the heavens. And
well, in fact, it just happened 2 days ago.
Did it?
Yeah.
And then also in... I'm just trying to think. Anyway, he said that the pyramids, when they started getting the ice, or when it went under the oceans or whatever, and the people had to disperse, they went to all parts of the globe, and some of them ended up in Egypt, and some in other parts of the world. And they think that the Sphinx actually he had people look at the Sphinx. And people that were knowledgeable about water weathering as well as wind weathering, and they think that the Sphinx actually is water weathered and is much older than the pyramids, which are wind weathered. Hmm. In fact, there's some man in England that's getting a group of people together and starting within the next few weeks They've gotten permission from the Egyptian government to dig under the Sphinx.
Oh, my. Right after they fixed it. But
after what?
Bad timing. They just fixed it, the poor thing.
Well, I know, but they think they've thought for years that there's something underneath the Sphinx. And mm-hmm. he thinks that there's maybe a big library of books because the people that built the pyramids
right.
got the ideas from the people from Atlantis, if in fact they did come from Antarctica and went to Egypt, that they got the ideas from some of the books and things that they had written.
Well, I like the story except that the bit about Antarctica, since Antarctica didn't sink, but Santorini did, and Santorini is a lot closer to Egypt.
But if you've ever heard of the Pierre Reese map of Antarctica?
No, I'm
Well, that was a map that they found years ago that they thought had been destroyed. And it dates back to, I don't know, hundreds of years ago. Mm-hmm. And it shows Antarctica. And he may have even copied it from a previous map. Because when the Alexandria Library, mm-hmm. they had a great library in Alexandria, Egypt years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And that burnt. And they think that this map might have survived, or people, a copy of it might have survived. Because it was Antarctica, it showed Antarctica not covered by ice. And when the Americans had that nuclear submarine that went under the ice cap and they charted the outline of Antarctica, everything compares exactly with this Pierre Reese map.
Mm-hmm.
So that's rather fascinating.
Yeah, it is.
So just to fill in my own knowledge of history, there's some landmass under Antarctica that sunk or moved?
No, I think it's remember when the submarines went down underneath the ice?
Well, which one?
That was in the North Pole, but maybe in the South.
One of the poles is all ice, and one of the poles has land under it. Which one is which?
I think they, don't know.
No, the South has land, the North doesn't.
So you can't go under the land part, presumably.
Oh, oh.
No, but there's an ice shelf that extends out around it.
Okay. And so Atlantis was part of...
Well, that's his speculation, but it's Ian Wilson.
And it moved?
By Colin Wilson. Excuse me. Ian Wilson.
No, but it got covered by ice. So that's equivalent to being sunk, I guess.
Oh, okay. So they're covered by ice. And the Sphinx was some sort of portable...
No. They built it there. No. They built it there, but they had all this knowledge of how to do this.
Okay, well, so why do they think there's a library under the Sphinx? I mean, there might be some sort of extraterrestrial control room, right? Or you know... Some,
like the X-Files or something.
Right.
Totally. Ian Wilson maybe will
write
the next X-Files.
Or the corpse of, it could be Jesus' real burial place. Like, why do they think there's a library under there? Just because of this knowledge about the pyramid?
They think that this knowledge was lost or hidden under the Sphinx. They think it was hidden, actually, under the Sphinx, since the Sphinx is much older than the pyramids. And I think they said it was Cheops or whatever that built the pyramid. But now they don't think that that's true. Well, he may have built the pyramid. They thought that he had built the Sphinx, but they don't think he's built the Sphinx now. He may have built the pyramid or one of the pyramids.
And it's interesting. There's a tradition of the Sphinx being the guardian of something, right?
A guardian. Well,
yeah,
of course
it's always
could be
something that you ask
of,
questions from to get past it. Yeah.
Right.
So.
Right. But anyway, it's fascinating.
It is. And so these explorers are now traveling to the Sphinx right now with their little shovels?
Well, when I was in England, they made
a... little shovels.
No. They have all sorts of archaeologists and people that are knowledgeable in all various fields, and the Egyptian government has given them permission to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be... I think they may even be there now, but whether they're going to start digging right away or
and
how
their
they're
shovels
going to do
are not
it,
little.
I don't know.
Their shovels are not little.
They have a sand submarine, actually.
Well, that's incredible. I mean, I think we should all be prepared for what might be found under there. I don't think it's going to be a simple library.
I haven't been to Egypt yet. That's one of my places I haven't been.
Really?
I'd like to go there, yeah.
But I thought... okay. I thought you had actually traveled the north of Africa. You ended up in Greece.
I traveled all of Africa, twice.
Right.
My husband and I did it in 1956. Backpacked on our own. There was nobody traveling then. We left from London and went down through France and Spain and Gibraltar, and then across the desert from a place called Agadir. In the front seat of this French CTM, which stands for Compagnie Trans-Sahara Maritime, and they were supplying the desert outposts, which were French at that time.
Right.
And we went from Agadir, which was we read about it when we were living in Toronto, that this... about how to go across the desert, and it was in this French tour book. So nobody seemed to know about it in Ottawa or Montreal, and we got to London, nobody knew, Paris, nobody knew, except they did have the same book that we had, where we'd seen that they do this trip across the desert.
Mm-hmm.
So we got down to this place where it was supposed to start in Agadir, And we got to the place where it was supposed to start, and this was 4 in the afternoon. And they said, oh, yes, we do this. We've been doing this for 25 years, and we leave at 4 in the morning. So we had to, they had to help us buy the food.
I wonder if some of your travel companions were Paul Bowles and his wife.
No, we were by ourselves. This is my husband and I.
Ah, I see.
And okay. We rented seats in the front of this truck, and we crossed the Sahara, and there was an Arab driver, a French-Algerian driver, because we couldn't go through two of the routes. We ended up going through the Mauritania track. There was another one, there were two others, but they all originated in Algeria, and at that time the Algerian War was on.
Oh, my.
So we had
it's still on, in fact.
Well, there's, yeah. Oh, God, yes.
Different guys, yeah.
In fact, I give out my card very freely, and I shouldn't do it. I have this guy that I met in Tunis several years ago. And he's been writing me and phoning me to send him an invitation to come to America. I don't blame him for wanting to leave Algeria. They're killing everybody there. But I don't know him. I don't want to do that, you know. But anyway, no, it was rather fascinating doing this trip. It took us 3 days, and we got to a place called Attar. And then because we didn't know anybody that was going on from there, we made arrangements to take this French military plane. And then someone said they could drive us, but the government, the guy there in charge of the army, wouldn't let us go by car.
Where was this place you took the plane from? Had you crossed the desert already by this point?
We got to Agadir, and then we went by public trip by this front seat of this truck. He was supplying the desert outpost with aviation oil. We spent one night in the French Foreign Legion officer's bed. He got out of his bed and let us sleep in it. And another night in a sort of a caravansary on the desert. And then the third night we got to the place where we were going. But meantime they shot a gazelle in the desert, and they cooked it right out they dug a hole and they cooked it over this grill. And that tasted quite interesting, quite good. And this Arab driver was always offering us his Arab tea, real sweet tea with lots of sugar in it. And then we had a lot of interesting experiences.
So what incredible power do you have over people that when you go and travel these places, they do so much for you? I mean, I can't even go to a local Eaton Park without being shunned.
Oh, I don't know. I talk to everybody, which is probably a disadvantage sometimes. At least giving out my card is. But no, I think it's interesting meeting people, and it's always fun to find out where they're from and what they do and that kind of thing.
Well, in fact, as part of this organization you belong to, the Justice League, what is it called? The International?
No, Servas.
Servas, which is...
Servas is an organization for peace and intercultural understanding, and you can stay in people's homes all over the world for 2 days at a time at no charge. The idea, of course, is to develop a rapport with them and see how they live, and sometimes they might ask you to stay longer.
Is your home open, for example?
Yeah, my home is open to members. And I've had a lot of people visit me, and I visited a lot of people. You can either be a host or a traveler, or you can do both if you want. And, of course, if you have no room to entertain people, sometimes you can be a day host and take people around for the day. I've had a lot of interesting experiences with that. In fact, when I was in China, I told some Chinese friends about this, and when the older daughter was going to go to Australia, I called these Australian Servas people, and they met her at the airport, and she lived with them for 2 years and ended up meeting an Australian and marrying him. Of course, 2 years is above and beyond the call of duty, but anyway. And then her sister married met a Dutchman in China, and my daughter and I went to the wedding 3 years ago. They ended up getting married to each other.
Well, that's incredible. So this organization just basically assimilates people from all over the world.
Right. And sometimes some places only have one host in the country, and some don't have any.
Does it cost anything to belong to this group, or what's the downside?
Yeah, the fee is about $55 a year, I believe, to be a member. And if you're a college student in the United States, they want to get international students that are studying here to become members, so they're only charging them $10. And they can travel anywhere in the United States and stay with Servas guests, which is Servas hosts, which is fine, because it makes it reasonable enough, and they don't have to pay for overnight stays, and they just have to pay for a bus or whatever, however they get there.
And you have no. So what kind of? Presumably, you have some kind of obligation to your ghost, to your host, to be sort of charming and personable, right?
I mean, well, you should be. Sometimes they if you're, I went to see the international secretary in Germany one time, and she told me about somebody that had pulled. What you get is a letter of introduction. You have to be interviewed by the organization before they'll give you this. It's like a passport. It's an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, and it mentions on there what you're interested in doing, and where you've traveled and where you've lived and that kind of thing. And I met this woman was telling me that this Indian was very obnoxious, so this woman just lifted up his letter of introduction so that he couldn't go and visit any more hosts. And sometimes they put out a warning if so and so comes to visit you, you know. You don't want to have him take his letter of introduction away, because if they're particularly obnoxious. Now, my daughter had a terrible experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't have any problems. I'm old enough now that nobody's going to bother me. But my daughter went to stay with somebody, and she noticed there wasn't any lock on the door, no doorknob. And she thought, that's strange. And she didn't think anything of it until the next morning the guy tried to hop in bed with her. I mean, obviously, that's not what you want to do. So she told me, and I called Servos in New York, and they dropped him. They said, you're allowed to have guests, but only male guests, no females, because they had complaints of him by other people. So you don't want that kind of thing to happen.
Yeah, that's not the sort of intercultural exchange that you want to foster. Yeah.
So did they verify that he was not bisexual, for example?
I don't know. I don't think they have.
Maybe we should call Servos. I mean, he could be, you know, doing the same thing to his male guests.
Oh, well, that's true, too. You're right. I didn't think about that.
you might need me as a consultant in this organization.
No, maybe you should go visit him.
He was a fireman, and he also baked cookies that he sold.
Where was this?
This was in Miami.
Miami.
Yeah.
Wow.
Charlotte, have you had any of the Servos guests that you've hosted, have any of them behaved badly? Or?
No, they've all been pretty good. Actually, when a Servos person comes and you try to do it when you're visiting people, if they're fixing salad for dinner, you help them fix salad and do things like that. I had one guy from Haifa, Israel, who was above and beyond the call of duty. I was cleaning out my gutters, so he climbed up a ladder 3 stories high and cleaned out my gutters for me. I might have done it, but I didn't want to fall and break my back either.
Yeah.
So
I just want to remind our listeners that the phone numbers again are 268-WRCT and 621-WRCT. And please access us on the web. That URL, Juan Pablo.
Pardon me?
Do you know the URL?
Of course I do. Who doesn't? Everybody who's listening knows it. It's www.loveline.
Wait, stop. It's actually not.
Loveline. I'm sorry. It's http /loveline.wrct.com.
Fabulous. And all of our shows, are archived there for your listening convenience. So surely there must be a Servos horror story in your own background, or in the background of the organization, because all your guests have been charming and personable.
Yeah, and I don't know if they've taken anything or not. If they have, I haven't noticed it. And you know, I trust everybody. These weren't necessarily Servos people, but they're people Ann and I met in Kenya when I finished my Africa trip, in the middle of my Africa trip, and they came to visit me in the States, and I was getting ready to leave actually, so. I said, well, you can stay for the weekend, and I wasn't even there, and they stayed for 2 days. So, but most of the people, I think, that travel are pretty trustworthy.
Interesting. So that's incredibly fascinating. And so this group not only is a group of people who like to travel, but it has these higher goals of promoting intercultural understanding.
Right. And how better, as I had mentioned earlier, I don't like to stay in hotels because they're expensive. I mean, I'm not out to pay money to hotels. That's money you can use on the trip and stay longer and that kind of thing. And you don't meet people in hotels except other tourists. And the idea if you're visiting a country is to meet the people in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I travel the way I do. None of my friends would travel the way I do. Of course, I went across the Sahara and, you know, go to the if you have to go somewhere, you go behind a bush or a tree. And, of course, there are not very many bushes or trees.
So I think you told me you traveled across the Sahara with only a single canteen and a loaf of crusty bread.
No. The second time I went was on this overland trip from London, a company called Hobo Trans Africa Expeditions, which was actually 34 years later than the time I originally went with my ex-husband now. And that was very interesting. They carried a lot of water, 30 gallons of water, and then they would refill it along the way. I was a little bit leery because they didn't put anything in the water. In other words, you had to get used to drinking the water wherever you happen to be. They didn't put any agents to prevent, whatever they do with the water. So you were drinking it and getting accustomed to the water along the way, which the man that you met, Rick, which he believed was the best way to do it. Now, other overland companies treated the water so that you wouldn't have any microbes or bacteria.
Why did he think that was a good thing to do?
I don't know. He thought that you ought to get accustomed to the water. Yeah, I think that was his idea.
So there are little stations all throughout the desert that are
the oasis.
Water stations?
For sure.
Well, we stopped in a couple of places. There, not all of them, but there are some places where there are oasis, like Tamanassett's one of them, in the middle of nowhere, so to speak. And
weren't you worried about bandits? I've heard that's really bad these days.
No, in Kenya later on afterwards, they had people that were held up watching the, during the game parks, visiting the game parks. But we didn't have any problems, although now a lot of the trucks don't go through some of the countries they used to. They don't go through Algeria now. I was lucky because it was just before the start of the Gulf War. I went in 1991, and this was October. And they said they were worried they might not let me into Algeria because of the Algerians didn't like the Americans' attitude with Iraq. Mm-hmm. So I was lucky because if I would have had to wait a month over in Niamey, Niger, till the truck came through. And I'm glad I didn't have to do that. But no, they did let me through. And we cooked all our own meals. And of course, we took some food from England underneath the floorboards. It was a Leyland truck that they converted for people to sit on. We had seats facing each other. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't too comfortable.
Sounds great.
Set up tents at night and took turns cooking the food and that kind of thing. But it was very interesting. I was old enough to be everybody's grandmother. And they're all English except for one Australian.
Yeah.
And
miracle there wasn't a German in there.
There wasn't any Germany. Why?
Well, everywhere I go, there is an Australian, New Zealander, and a German.
Oh, really? No. Yeah. We did meet a German who was bicycling across the desert.
Well, I knew. Yeah, the Germans wouldn't go by truck, of course. Yeah.
But it was interesting because everybody kept stopping and asking him if he needed any water. So he was sort of overladen on his bicycle. And then we met a group of people out in the middle of nowhere. And Rick, our driver, they had some goats, and he bought some goat's milk from them and gave them some water because they wanted some water. But it was rather interesting. And then there was a couple that traveled along with us that had converted an old ambulance into a sort of an overland van, and they sold it when they got down to the end of the line through the desert. And one thing, too, you have to be careful when you're writing down your license plate number, because there was a man that we picked up along the way who was going from France with a Panhard to sell it when he got down farther in Africa, and he put the wrong registration number on when you fill out the papers at the border, and they confiscated the vehicle.
Oh, my.
So he didn't have any car to sell, so he had to hitch a ride with us.
Not at the same time. They confiscated it later on?
No, just before we picked him up.
Oh, really?
They confiscated it. So Rick said, make sure you get the right number on there. We don't want the truck taken.
So I'm the kind of person who starts sobbing uncontrollably if I'm away from television and the internet for more than 12 hours at a time.
Oh, God. It wouldn't be any good to go on those things.
I mean, so what's it like?
It might do him good. I think it would.
It might do him good. You're right.
Yeah. I don't think I can imagine surviving sitting in the back of a hot, uncomfortable truck for 14 hours a day while it...
Well, we played games. We played, okay, let's all switch sides. we played bridge, not bridge, we played hearts and all sorts of things
switch
like that.
Switch sides.
And you have live, sensual, dark Moroccan men driving you around. I mean,
and then we had firewood, too. We had to pick up firewood where we went along because we had to build a fire to cook. And in some places, there wasn't any wood. So whenever we saw wood, we'd stop and get the firewood, and we put it right in the middle. So here you're sitting here, and the other people are sitting on the other side in this big pile of wood in the middle. And then, of course...
So that game of watching the wood pile grow.
Yeah, right.
Burn up some hours.
And then the driver, of course, was separated from the main body of the truck. And if you had to go to the bathroom, either you pushed a button so he'd know to stop. And then they had this sort of...
You may have to do it on the fly.
They had this section called, not on the fly, no. Well, you guys could do it, but not any of the women. But anyway, they had this cab, they called it the cage, where we used to put our big backpacks and only get those out at night. And then we had the day packs to work with during the day. And they had that all with a metal gate across, chained, so if anybody got on the truck, they wouldn't be able to steal anything. In fact, when we ever stopped... We had three people posted there, one inside the truck and one at the front and one at the back, so that we could prevent people from climbing onto the truck. But anyway, behind this cage, underneath, Rick had extra oil, and he had all sorts of things that he wanted to sell when he got to some of these countries. Right. You wouldn't believe things that were sold or exchanged. People brought their old sneakers that they didn't want and ripped T-shirts. And they would trade them for wood carvings and things like that. In fact, in one of the places,
Charlotte, let me just suppress you for just a second. Yeah. I have to remind our listeners that this is WRCT Pittsburgh. No, I have to do this every hour, otherwise.
Oh, I know.
Otherwise, I get put in jail. And I'm going to read a public service announcement. There are over 1,200 African American children in Pennsylvania waiting for permanent homes. Some are school age, many are toddlers, and others are sibling groups that need to stay together. For more information about adoption, attend an informational meeting on Thursday, July 2nd at Black Adoption Services, a program of Three Rivers Adoption Council, at 307 4th Avenue, Pittsburgh. Meetings will be held at 2 and 6:30 p.m. All families are welcomed, single men and women, couples, young, old, experienced, or new. For more information, contact Charnel Conley at 412-471-8722. I'm sorry to interrupt that, but I have these duties to perform.
That's all right.
So,
sure. Duty first.
So the last thing you said was there's this guy in a truck. He's got wood carvings and old T-shirts to sell.
Not wood carvings to sell. They traded the wood carvings in Lilongwe. Tanzania, I think. Tanzania.
He told me that he brought along color sections from the Sunday Times to give as gifts to border guards when they want a little something. So something with color pictures.
Oh, really? He told you that? They ran into him later on after they finished their duty in the Peace Corps. I went down and saw them in Gabon. That was the purpose of this Africa trip. And then later on, they ran into Rick in Lagos, Nigeria. Was it Lagos?
No, it was up in...
Kano?
North of Kano, I think it was. But
that was a coincidence, speaking of running into people. Oh, anyway, to get back to that, I saw somebody with a Dukakis shirt on. And I almost died.
Well, that's probably the only place you could wear Dukakis shirts.
In fact, I took a picture. I took a slide. I took a lot of slides.
Now, was this in... This was in... Did we get into Nigeria somehow?
This was Malawi, actually. Malawi. Near Lilongwe. I didn't do Nigeria this trip. Actually... It was supposed to be 6 months, 15,000 miles from London to Vic Hope Falls in Zimbabwe. And I got sick in Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso. And I went to the consulate there because I thought maybe they could put me in touch with a doctor. And the woman there said, if you feel sick, you want to go home. And she grew up in Morrisville. When she saw my passport, Bristol is about 7 miles from where she grew up, where I live. And so she gave me the name of a French doctor. In the meantime, I booked a ticket out to leave the next morning.
To go back to the United States?
Yeah, because I didn't really feel too well. And I'm glad I did, or I could have died down there. Because they had overbooked the plane by 20 people. And when I bought this ticket, the girls, I had my credit card. Thank God for credit cards. Because you can get out of... anywhere if you need to, you know, if you don't have the cash. And so I went back to the campsite, and they put me in one of these rondavels like the natives live in. They packed all my luggage and came to get me just before time to get on the plane. And when I got home the next day, I went through Paris, and I got home, I found out when I went to the doctor I had double pneumonia and I got shingles. So I waited 3 months before I could return, because the best place to return was Nairobi. Otherwise, I could maybe get somewhere, and the truck had already left. So when I talked with London, they said the best thing to do is to wait and rejoin in Nairobi. So that's what I did. Then I met my daughter there, and we hitchhiked in Zimbabwe and South Africa.
I'm actually a little bit surprised about the credit card story. I'm surprised. I mean, shouldn't you have just brought some, bits of colored foil and broken glass to trade with the natives? I mean, the whole idea of credit cards seems so Western.
Well, I mean, if you have to get home, I didn't carry that much cash.
I see.
And you can the airplane companies do take credit cards, so that's an advantage.
You need a lot of colored foil.
So, okay.
Was there anybody else who got sick on this trip?
Yeah, one of the girls after I rejoined the trip got hepatitis. And she was in Scotland. She was a fish farmer. And so we had to put her on the plane after I had rejoined. After I rejoined the trip, we put her on the plane in Mombasa. And there are a couple of people that got sick along the way, but not sick enough to go home.
What's the major kind of source of illness? And I mean, you said you got pneumonia, which is a perfectly ordinary disease. Was it from eating this potentially contaminated water, or was?
No, I don't know. A couple of people were sick and had bad colds, and I don't know what. I was coughing all over the place, and I just thought, oh, I'd better go home. And later on, my daughter told me one of the persons that she had met, an older person, had actually died after she met him. And she saw the group a couple of weeks later, and they said, oh, no, he had died. And it was one young girl from Australia. You get malaria. In fact, our driver, malaria recurs, so that he had had, this was his seventh trip through Africa, the driver. And he was always getting malaria. Anyway, this girl from Australia was on this other overland trip. She got malaria, cerebral malaria, and was dead in 2 days. Now, I didn't realize I didn't realize at the time that malaria killed you. I mean, I just thought you got this fever.
Right.
And
the
terrible thing
gets into your brain.
Yeah, the terrible thing is they didn't tell anybody on the tour. They were still there, and they thought she was still sick. And then her roommate, her tent mate, happened to be walking through this shed where they had put her body. And she freaked out because she saw her lying there dead, and they hadn't told her.
So before she saw the corpse, did they have her, propped up at the dinner table, did they make some kind of fake doll?
No. Oh, another girl got, she had shingles. One of the other girls got shingles in Ghana. I'd forgotten that. And they stayed there with her for, over a week till she didn't recover. She went home, and then she rejoined the trip 6 weeks later with her brother.
Incredible. And shingles? What are shingles?
She had shingles in her eyes.
In her eyes?
No. It's the chicken pox virus that lies dormant in your system.
Right.
And then reappears under stress and very bad conditions.
Oh, so it was the stress that activated the shingles.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Well, the other thing that sort of disturbs me is that everyone that's getting sick is in the proximity of your daughter. Now, is it possible that she's some kind of vector for all this illness?
No, this was before she came.
Oh, okay.
No, she only went on the trip for 2 days, and then she had, somebody was going to do some other kind of a trip, and so she said she'd meet me later.
Oh, okay.
And that's the interesting thing, because I had no idea where I was going to meet her, and she wrote me letters, which I didn't get. And then I had been telling everybody I was waiting in Harare, Zimbabwe for her, and I kept saying to everybody, I'm waiting for my daughter. So this one guy I had told happened to be in Lilongwe, Malawi, and he heard Anne saying to this friend whom we had met in Nairobi, he asked Anne where I was, and she said, oh, I'm supposed to meet her later in Harare. And this friend that I had met...
She was talking about her mother, right?
She was talking about me, and this friend, this guy that I had been saying I was waiting for my daughter, turned and said, is your mother's name Charlotte? And she said, yes. And she said, your mother's waiting for you at Stable Lodge in Harare, Zimbabwe. So then Anne called me and said she'd be there in about a week. So that was really a strange coincidence. In fact, I forgot to mention that to Anne. Anne's been writing some little stories about strange coincidences, and I mentioned having run into her on the street, and she wrote that, but I don't think she mentioned this occasion about that either.
Now, Anne is now in Bosnia.
She's in Bosnia, right. She's taking part in registration there. I was there in November for the elections, and I didn't think I'd have a chance to go to the registration because I hadn't done it before, and there are more people usually that want to go than they have room for. So I planned a trip to Europe, which I went on, but then they called me up and asked me if I'd like to go, and I couldn't, so I said Anne could go because she had registered as well, so she's over there now. That was a fascinating experience. But you can't walk in certain areas. There's so many landmines there. And, of course, we haven't signed that landmine treaty either. Most all the other countries in the world have, but we haven't. And you can't go walking in the woods or the forest because there are just so many mines around.
That's incredible. So we have about 60 seconds left. I can't find my engineer right now, but I believe we have only a few seconds left. And so I'd like to wrap this up quickly and just ask you, just to complete this Bosnia idea, so this they need foreign people to do their voter registration?
Well, they have people from all over the world that go to like something like Jimmy Carter does, and you supervise the elections and make sure they're fair.
I see.
And there are different organizations that do that, the UN and the OSCE, which is monitoring elections and they're doing the registration in Bosnia now. And they have elections all over the world.
So they do this with foreign citizens because they're more likely to be...
Well, they want to have people that aren't involved directly. So if they have people from Bosnia taking part in them, then they're not sure if there's going to be any hanky-panky.
I see. Well, that's fascinating. I'm sorry to suppress you, but we're actually completely out of time, I think. So Charlotte and her guardian and Juan Pablo, I would like to thank you all for joining us and thank our listeners for listening in. And that will be it for this episode of Sex Talk. Good night.
Should be Travel Talk.
Yeah, maybe we should consider changing the name, actually. So good night, everyone.
It's too bad.
I'm crazy. Crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy. Crazy for feeling so blue. I knew that you'd love me as long as you wanted. And then someday you'd leave me for somebody new. Worry. What in the world did I do? I'm crazy for thinking that my love could hold you. And I'm crazy for trying. And I'm crazy for crying. I'm crazy. And when the evening sun goes down, you're gonna find me hanging down. The nightlife ain't no good life. It's my life. Just like me, dreaming all those used to be. Nightlife ain't no good life, but it's my life.
dreams. My life ain't no good life. It's my life.